Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. Do not forget to buy lentils, or the lentil soup you're making for dinner will be sorely lacking. By the way, Mrs. Calloway says thanks for helping her bundle home and auto. She appreciates the extra savings, even though you kept using the word apropos incorrectly. But the main thing is, do not forget to buy, what was it? Something apropos the lentil soup. Sorry, I'll call you back.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
No Avery Bradley. Maybe no Kelly Olynyk. No shot in game two. Let's talk about it.
It's time. You want the best Celtics talk around? Here it is. This is the Rain and Jays podcast. Here's John and Jay.
So here we are, game two against the Atlanta Hawks. The matchup's already terrible. Jay King, who cannot wait to get home from dinner, podcasting from the streets of Atlanta. This is true dedication.
It's kind of windy out here, but it's nice, man. Atlanta's warm. Every time I'm in another city, I wonder why I didn't choose a warmer city to live. I love Boston. But warmth is huge, man. Warmth is huge.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
Hopefully Kevin Durant isn't listening to this podcast.
Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, we're just, you know, hoping to attract multiple huge free agents, and you're just like, nah, I don't want to live here anymore.
No, I will always live in Massachusetts, man. I'll never leave. But
you want to be on the beach in Miami. We've already gone through this, Jay.
Yeah,
Jesus. You love the hot weather. We get it. But the second you retire, you're buying a home down south, and you're leaving. That's fine. That's what old people do. But we don't have to worry about that for a little while. We're worrying about the Boston Celtics right now, who are now without Avery Bradley, who in the Defensive Player of the Year voting was basically, you could, if you want to spin it in the Celtics green way, voted the best defensive guard in the NBA. So
defensive guard of the year, yeah. Defensive guard. Tony Allen, better than everybody.
Yeah, better than all of the other guards out there. So let's get to it with Avery Bradley gone. I'd like to hear – I have my opinion. I'll share that. But I want to see what you think. How do you think the Celtics fill in this gap, and how do they recover just on the Avery Bradley perspective?
I think they have to go small because – especially if Kelly Olynyk misses game two, which he might, he missed practice again today, they're going to need shooting. And they need, it's RJ Hunter time, man. It's Jonas.
This is unbelievable.
And we didn't think it would come to this. Literally, what was it, 2-3 days ago? We said, you know, if any of the rookies get their chance, something has gone drastically wrong.
Yeah.
And something did go drastically wrong. And now it's R.J. Hunter time. It's got to be R.J. Hunter's time because you need that shooting. And obviously, Terry Rozier emerged over the last month or so of the season as Brad Stevens' usual emergency rotation member. But in this case, you have to go with shooting because otherwise Atlanta loads up in the middle and makes it so tough for Isaiah Thomas, so tough for everybody else to get easy buckets. So I think it's R.J. Hunter. And it's Jonas Jerebko. You gotta do it.
Well, why not both Rozier and Hunter? Because if Olynyk is out and Bradley is out, you gotta fill it with a couple of guys. You can't just give Jerebko all of that extra time. I think both of those guys get a shot. You know, the Bradley thing is, to me, it's not ideal, obviously, but I think in the grand scheme of things, the ripple effect of Avery Bradley being out isn't as bad as the ripple effect of some of these other guys being out, because you can replace Bradley with Marcus Smart. You move him into the starting lineup. And if Terry Rozier can just be solid, not even great, just solid, then you're not affecting what a lot of the other guys have to do on the court. But without Olynyk, now, geez, it's two shooters that are gone. I agree, R.J. Hunter, but I think you need both. I think you need both guys out there at some point, mix and match, maybe not at the same time, but both of those guys are going to have to get some minutes.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to go big. I know they had some success back in November going big against the Hawks, but the Hawks are a different team now. Since the All-Star break, they've had the number one defense. And Millsap and Horford can kill big lineups, take Sullinger out to the perimeter, whatever, on that end. And then the other end, their defense is so good, so athletic, so long, that they can just pack the paint when you don't have enough shooting. And we saw that in game one when the Celtics started with one of the worst shooting first halves the NBA playoffs have ever seen. And then we saw it in the last game of the regular season when both times Stevens decided to go small after halftime, and Jared Sullinger hardly played at all. So I don't think this is a scenario where you lose Avery Bradley and you start going bigger again and you put Tyler Zeller in there or something like that. I think they've got to go small. They've got to try to keep shooting on the court.
I agree. I still don't think Tyler Zeller works in this series because the matchups just don't work. You know, who does he guard? He can't guard Millsap. He can't guard Al Horford. He's just, it doesn't work for him, and he doesn't stretch the floor enough because Millsap can go out and cover Zeller but still make it back in time to be a problem in the middle of the lane. So I think a lot of things are happening right here at the same time and complicating everything. Complicating everything is Jay Crowder's continued right ankle issue, which you wrote about on Mass Live. So for the people who may not have read it by now, but whenever you hear it, first of all, go there and read it. But explain a little bit about what you saw from Jay Crowder and how this complicates the entire defense even more with now that Bradley's out, but just the whole concept of what the Celtics are trying to do defensively.
So normally, you know, Crowder is one of the most versatile defenders in the NBA. He can guard Al Horford sometimes. He can guard Jeff Teague sometimes. He spent time guarding Russell Westbrook, Zach Randolph, just about anybody. You know, he's a great defender. He finished 13th in Defensive Player of the Year, so he was the other Celtic who got a vote. Since his ankle injury, he just hasn't been moving as well. And it's been obvious, really, in the seven games he's played since then. But it was even more obvious against Atlanta in game one. And down the stretch, with about 2 minutes left especially, that was the one that really killed the Celtics. They were down two. It was 92-90. And Atlanta went straight to get Crowder in the switch. They knew they were going to switch. They got Crowder in the switch, and Teague just backed up, blew right by him for a layup. It wasn't even close. Didn't even really give him any issues before Teague went in for the layup. And so if Crowder can't do a better job switching, that poses real issues too, because that's a big part of their defense, and that's a big part of what they've done for all season. And obviously he's going to spend some time on Millsap, and especially if Turner is guarding Teague, which he might now that Bradley's out, at least for a while. You know, the Celtics would usually switch that and get Crowder on Teague. But that was a bad, bad matchup in game one. Teague scored three or four layups with Crowder guarding him. So that's something to watch moving forward. Crowder's got to do a better job.
So let's take this cumulative effect here. The starting lineup, Smart, you think Smart gets into the starting lineup or Turner? I think it should be Smart.
I think Smart, because, like, he's not a shooter. They can still help off him. But he, like, kind of gives the threat of shooting because he will shoot, I guess. So, and if he makes a couple more, then all of a sudden they have to guard him differently.
Hey, if there's any team out there that would be worried about Marcus Smart shooting, it should be the Atlanta Hawks. For some reason, he likes to actually make the threes against the Hawks. So, whatever. Keep doing that, Marcus Smart. I think it should be Smart because you just – defensively, you need him more than you need Evan Turner. And on the second unit, now that Smart would be in the starting lineup, I really think you need that stabilizing force. You can't have Marcus Smart leading the second unit with all of these injuries because there's no Bradley to lean on. There's no Olynyk to space the floor. You're going to need somebody. You're going to need somebody to kind of hold things together. I really think Evan Turner should stick with the second unit the way things are going right now. So you bring in Smart, and then you mix and match, and you try to figure out your spots to put R.J. Hunter out there and to put Terry Rozier out there. So you've got Isaiah Thomas, Marcus Smart, Jay Crowder. Now, the Celtics in the second half, as the train rolls by you, the Celtics in the second half in game one, I don't recall them playing Jared Sullinger and Amir Johnson together in the second half. They got away from that match, that combination, because in the first half, it was pretty obvious that you couldn't play those two together. So the question now becomes, what do you do at the start now of this game? Especially if Kelly Olynyk's out, who goes into, let's say maybe Brad Stevens says, if we slide Sullinger to the second unit, maybe he can sort of kind of do what Kelly does and try to stretch the floor a little bit that way. Then you start Amir Johnson with who? Jarebko? Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, that's where Avery Bradley's injury hurts you again, because all that depth, like, you're just so much thinner without Bradley. You know, he plays 30-plus minutes a game, and without him, you're going to either have to give those minutes. Effort's going to stay small, which it's clear that Stevens likes to play small against Atlanta. It's clear he thinks that's their best option. If you stay small, now you're stretching the other guys thin, or you're going to Rozier and or Hunter, who have played combined 600-some-odd minutes all season, a.k.a. their whole careers.
Yeah.
So it's just – I think that's a real tough situation for Stevens, because you're damned if you go big. You've already seen that hasn't worked the last two games. It's just been getting smoked. And then you're damned if you go small, because then you got to play Crowder more minutes, and he's already hurt to begin with. You've got to play, as I said, the two guys who have barely played in their whole careers. It's just, as we've seen all season long, when the Celtics lose one key player, there's like a ripple effect that impacts their, not as much their starting lineup, as deeper down the bench. And there's not so much synergy in the second unit, and there's a real drop-off when you get those rookies in, when you get Zeller in. So it's a big injury. It's a tough injury. And I still wouldn't be surprised if the Celtics won tomorrow, because those guys seem to love when people count them out.
Yeah, they really do. So who do you start? What's your starting five? Jump center tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Who are the five guys on the floor for the Celtics?
I think I would go with Smart, because, as you said, I'd rather have Turner with the second unit. Or if you're going to play small and keep Hunter and whatever. So I'd have Smart there. And, yeah, if you're going small, Jarebko.
So Jarebko starts at the four, and then with Amir or Sully at the five?
I would go with Amir at the five.
Yeah.
Bring Sully, you know, hope that he can give you a little offensive punch for the second unit.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Sully kind of tries to slide into the Olynyk role off the bench and maybe tries to space things that way, because you're going to need somebody to space the floor with Evan Turner. That was going back to the David Lee thing. When you can't space the floor with Evan Turner, then you're really eliminating Evan Turner. So if you're starting Jarebko, that's one guy who can't go. If you don't have Olynyk, that's another guy who can't go. So you throw Evan Turner out there with Jared Sullinger. Holy crap. With RJ Hunter, Terry Rozier. Who am I forgetting?
I mean, they better hope Olynyk plays.
Yeah.
His availability is really huge, because they need to spread the floor. They need to pull Atlanta away from the rim. And, like, with Smart, Turner, Rozier, Sullinger, Amir, there are a lot of guys in the Celtics you can sag off, and sag off hard. So,
see, I would rather have Olynyk start. If he's healthy, I'd rather have Olynyk start and keep Jarebko on the bench and kind of see how that goes. because then you could have him play the four. So you'd have – it'd be Turner with two rookies, basically, and Sullinger and Jarebko, which doesn't really sound appetizing at all, but here we are. But at least
I think they've got to give bigger minutes to their best players. I know Stephen Tate's doing that. He's never liked doing that, going back to his first days with Boston. But it's time. It's the playoffs, man. You just got to throw guys out there. You got to give Isaiah more minutes. You got to give Jay more minutes. You got to give Marcus, Evan, all those guys more minutes, rather than give those to Hunter and Rozier, because otherwise you're screwed. You might be screwed anyway, but you might as well go down with your best players playing the bulk of the minutes. And so I know it's tough the way they play. If you get tired, it's really tough to play as hard as they do and as aggressively as they do all the time. But they need it. That's their best option right now.
So they normally play Isaiah Thomas most, if not all, of the first quarter. Do you try to stagger Thomas a little bit? You're going to bump up his minutes. So maybe you pull him out with a couple minutes to go in the first quarter and you bring him back earlier. So there's just – he gets more rest around the quarter break. And you just – you bring in Evan Turner for Isaiah, and you got Turner with the rest of those guys. And then you bring in Isaiah for, what, Marcus? And then maybe you bring Marcus in for – you know, you throw Marcus out there with as almost like your three – basically, he'd be you go small, and then you put Jarebko and Sullinger out there, and there you go. So you run with those guys, and then Isaiah Thomas is going to get a lot of minutes.
You have to.
You can't just. I look, and I'm as much of a fan as RJ Hunter as I am. It's hard to put the kid out there as a rookie who hasn't played much in the NBA. To go out there and be like, okay, great, now you get 20 minutes in the playoffs against the Atlanta freaking Hawks, who are, how just so happened to be peaking at the right time, the best defensive team in the league this calendar year, and they were a 60-win team last year. Like, that's a little nuts. So, this is not a great situation. there's really no easy way to put this. But I think the Celtics can still do the little things that will at least give them a chance. And look, the first half in game one was terrible. They blatantly lost players, especially early on. They lost Millsap. They lost Horford. They lost Kyle Korver on an inbound play. Complete total mental breakdowns early on that gave the Hawks a huge lead.
And Bazemore. Bazemore scored 23 points. And yeah, they were all layups. It was like he had a few backdoor cuts, some transition layups. He got by guys who led him to his left dominant hand. It was their defense on Bazemore was not good.
No. So, if you want to look for a silver lining, maybe the injuries will lead to a greater focus that doesn't lead to some of those things happening. Like that early on, when Atlanta was just really starting to pull away and the Celtics looked really, really bad, their defense looked like it had just started, like they had just started to play together on defense. There were two guys, I remember seeing one play, two guys were closing out on a guy in the corner. When does that ever happen, where the Celtics have such a complete miscommunication that two guys are rushing the guy in the corner? I don't care if it's Korver. You don't need to throw two guys out there. Just complete breakdowns. So if they can just focus, first and foremost, focus on just doing the right things on defense. You might still get beat because of the personnel and the situation, but at least get beat doing the things that you're supposed to be doing and not screwing up like that. Secondly, I think if you're going to see more Evan Turner and Isaiah Thomas on the floor, then we need to see more Isaiah Thomas off the ball, because you're not going to spot up Evan Turner. And there was a stretch, especially in the first half, where Evan Turner was on the floor not handling the ball with Isaiah Thomas, and that just doesn't work. So I get when Isaiah Thomas is out there, you want the ball in his hands all the time. But there are ways to do it with him off the ball. If he's going to be sharing the floor with Evan Turner, then this is an opportunity to free up Isaiah Thomas off a couple of screens and cause a little bit of chaos. Let him catch and then drive or take advantage of switches or guys going under screens or something. I'd like to see more of that. So those little things need to happen that could spur some of the Celtics' success rather than some of the crap we saw in the first half of game one.
So much crap in that first half, man. It was just brutal, brutal half. And it's been a habit lately. For whatever reason, their starts have just been abominable the last four games. And those are all against the teams that they were competing against for playoff seeding, including now the Hawks twice.
Did you just take the elevator?
Yeah, I just took the elevator.
I'm like, wait a minute. When did Jay go into the ER? Is that an EKG? No, it's the elevator.
I tried to keep it on mute the whole time, but then you stopped talking, and so I had to bring it off and pull myself back into the conversation.
I'm not even going to edit that out because this is organic. This is a demonstration of your work ethic. I don't want to harp on that, but you wrote that piece on Jay Crowder. You posted it. You ran out for food. And you appeased me by getting onto the podcast on your way back. We could have waited. It's like 10:30 at night, but you could have waited, but no. I needed to do it a little early. You jumped to the occasion. I love it. This is great.
This is playoff podcasting.
That's how you do it.
If it was a regular season, you know, you can take a night off here and there. The playoffs, you come to perform. You podcast on the elevators if you need to. You podcast in the streets of Atlanta. You do it all.
You cannot let
buses and trains and elevators stop you. You just have to keep pushing through, be resilient.
Right.
And that's kind of what the Celtics have to do with Avery Bradley out. Just take Jay King's mentality. Yes, I just referred to myself in the third person. and yes, I hate myself for it. But you gotta take Jay King's mentality and just take it out to the court, and then you'll give yourself a real shot to win.
Now here's a big question for you. If in the first part of a podcast you don't feel like that you're really bringing it, you don't feel like you're making any good points or anything like that, do you change shoes for the second part of the podcast?
I change headphones.
You change your mic. The other mic had no good points in it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a weird thing Isaiah does. And as we're podcasting, the Oklahoma City Thunder just put in a game winner. Steven Adams at the buzzer. Maybe it didn't count, though. I don't know. But no.
Isaiah,
that's a weird thing Isaiah does. And it's worked out at least the two times we've heard about it. I'm sure he's changed his shoes like 12 other times, and he's had bad second halves. Ooh, that was after the buzzer. But Isaiah doesn't usually put two bad halves together. There's been like two or three games since the All-Star break only where he hasn't played well in either half. Maybe not even that many.
Just looking through my notes in the first half and in the first game.
Oh God! Oh God!
What happened?
No, I'm saying that your notes from the first half. That must be ugly.
No, I'm sorry. My notes from game one. What did Marcus Smart say after the game when he fouled down three with 30 seconds left?
He said last time he looked up the clock, he thought there was less than 24 seconds, and he just screwed up. And he was really accountable for it. But, you know, you can't have that. And it was the second time he's done it. If you remember earlier in the Memphis game, when all his players were – all his teammates were jumping around like, what the hell did you just do?
Yep.
And he did it again in the playoffs. And obviously he had an unbelievable fourth quarter, but down three with 36 seconds left, you've got a chance to go get a stop and tie the game. And that hurt him.
That was bad. That was bad. So I hadn't really seen much about that. Cause I have written on my notes, Marcus Smart doing it all. And then right next to it, like really fast scribble, Marcus Smart file, throw it down, you know, down three. Like, what the hell was that? So
yeah, that was.
And hey, Brad Stevens got a technical foul.
Yes, he did.
For the first time in like a little over a year.
Yeah, that was unreal. That was That was Mad Brad. I wonder what he said, because some guys have the reputation where if they say something borderline, they're going to get hit with a technical foul. Brad must have said something that really, really crossed the line, because if officials know, like, he is not the guy who's going to get one out of a reputation. He is the last guy to get one out of a reputation. He must have said something reckless. I wish someone would give audio of whatever he said to the refs.
Isn't everybody mic'd up? Someone somewhere has to have this mic'd up, right? Everybody has a mic on in the playoffs. I want to know what Brad Stevens said. First of all, I know we all joke that, you know, Mr. Indiana, Midwestern, gosh darn Brad Stevens. He's not Mr. Gosh darn Brad Stevens.
He's feisty. He's way feistier than people.
Let's start to, like, break that narrative out, because I think people will start to see that. I mean, he drops F-bombs. I mean, it's not like some of the guys out there, like, I'm trying to think of a great example, but there are guys, it's not like he's a Van Gundy, you know, who's just very demonstrative, but he's not innocent. He's not as innocent as he looks. He's not gotten texts for a reason. So I'm just curious what he said, because it happened like going into a break on the telecast. So you couldn't see it. I don't know what it looked like from the arena, but very hard to imagine what he could have said to earn that technical foul.
Whatever it was, it was way over the top. And I would pay a lot of money to get that audio.
Oh, God. There's got to be somebody out there has got to have that.
I will stop on your children's testicles, Ralph. Like, go full Tyson on him.
I know. I figure maybe he'll say something a little more subtle, like, tell your wife I said hi or something like that. Like, I think he's like a little more like subtle, kind of like, I know where you live type of person. Not like very angry. I don't know. That's just I think he's got a dark side. So
I went through all the advanced stats, and you're one of the worst officials there is.
All right. So let's kind of get this going here. So game two, what are we looking at here for game two? Do you see the Celtics magically pulling something out here?
I don't know. I
honestly, who the hell knows, right, with this team?
I think
they shouldn't
series...
win. They shouldn't win this game, which means they'll win by 12.
Yeah, although Atlanta's a good team. They're not a great team. Like, this should be a really good series. And if Avery Bradley wasn't healthy, I'm fully confident it would be a great series. Now the Celtics are going to have to play really well to win. And at this point, like, there's got to be a lot of pressure on them, you know? This group, for the most part, I know Amir Johnson was on the team last year. This group is now 0-5 in the playoffs. And at some point, like, that pressure has got to build. And obviously they weren't expected to win a game against Cleveland last year. Obviously it's just one game so far in Atlanta. But now 0-5, and Brad Stevens still hasn't won a playoff game. And, like, even though none of that is crazy and none of it is really anything to be – entirely critical of, like, 0-5 in the playoffs is 0-5 in the playoffs. So there's a little pressure there, I think. And until they get that off their back, even before the series, Isaiah Thomas repeated a few times, like, we got to get the win off our back. We got to get that first win. And so I do think it's something that they're a little worried about. Not worried, but they're aware of the fact that they still haven't gotten a playoff victory yet.
I don't like that. I don't like that. I don't care about that. First of all, They walked into an 8-1 series last year. They got swept by the Cavs, who went to the finals. That's not really something to really worry about. You kind of throw that out. And I know that these guys have a supreme level of confidence and all of that stuff. It's a different story the way they approach it. But let's be real here. They were the 8th seed. They shouldn't have even been the 8th seed. They were destined to be a lottery team. And just, they went on a remarkable run. Brad Stevens is too good of a coach. Isaiah Thomas is too good of a player. And meanwhile, last year, like, the the Pacers just really sucked when they should have been better. They should have made the playoffs. Other teams really cooperated by being very disappointing. So, I'm sorry, they were the 2-7 series. I said 8-1, but they were the 2-7 series. But still, they went up against a finals participant. So whatever, you throw that out, and then you lose game one on the road in a 4-5 series. That happens to everybody. So I think if they're really worried about that, then that kind of explains the first half that they had, because they really didn't look like they were playing basketball. They looked like they were kind of lost out there, and maybe they're thinking about that too much. Look, game two, they've got to really just settle down and play basketball. Like, I don't want to sound like a cliche, but you just got to forget about the circumstances and just realize that the court is still the same size, the basket's still 10 feet off the ground, and you're still a good basketball team that responds in situations like this. And if they don't do stupid things, like play defense like they did in the first half, they're going to be okay. The shots will fall. They'll figure things out. Just don't be stupid and make dumb mistakes like leaving Kyle frickin' Korver alone in the lane in an out-of-bounds play. Like, that's unacceptable. Play basketball. Do what you've done for 82 games mostly. Well, I should say 79 games, because those last three weren't great. But just play basketball. It's just go out there and play. And I'm sure they know that. I'm not breaking any news by saying that. But when you start throwing that other crap out there, the 0-5 in the play, you start thinking about other things. It's simple. And if they do that, they have a chance.
That's yep. They've got a chance. By the way, can we just talk about Felger's comment? I didn't hear the comment, but about Paul Millsap. That's
embarrassing.
What was the quote? Something like Millsap.
He said, is Millsap really any good? Because he seems like a stiff out there.
Seems like a stiff. He's one of the best two-way big men in the league. He shoots threes. He's off the dribble. He can pass. He's unbelievable defensively.
He's one of the best defensive players in the league. We've said it on the podcast before. Everybody knows the stats. The only player in the NBA to be top 10 steals and blocks. He is an all-NBA team guy. Could be a first-team guy, probably a second-team guy. But multiple-time All-Star, he's, like, arguably their best player. I mean,
I don't think it's arguable. I would put him as their best player now.
So, I mean, like, look, Felger, Chuck and I were talking about this offline earlier today. Felger has a shtick. Like, his job is to go out there and make you want to fight him, and so you can respond and, you know, listen to the show and call into the show and call him an idiot or tweet him. Like, he wants that attention. Like, that's his job. Like, he doesn't really care about what we're saying. But that works when he kind of knows football. He kind of knows hockey. He's a big hockey guy. So he can do that shtick with some knowledge behind those things. And the Red Sox to a lesser extent. But he hates basketball. He doesn't want to watch basketball. He thinks all basketball players are pussies. He just hates this team. He hates the sport. So he says things like this that are embarrassingly bad, and he tries to pull his shtick, but he just sounds like a goddamn idiot. And like I said on Twitter, for people who didn't see the tweet, Boston is a great sports city. But if your full-time sports radio stations, both of them, because the other one's not immune, but it just happens to be Felger who said it today. If both of those stations are out there misinforming fans, then there's no way you can say Boston is the greatest sports town in America. It's good, but you can't say Boston's the greatest because your sports radio stations are out there being idiots.
I think you're going a little too far, blaming Felger for Boston not being the greatest
If you have two full-time sports radio stations, Jay, you got two full-time sports radio stations. So for people who don't go to the internet and listen to us or listen to any other great Celtics podcast or any other podcast out there for sports that whatever sport it is that you love, if they're out there spreading these stupid comments like Marcus Smart is basically a failure after two seasons in the NBA, saying he plays like a pussy. But that's what they said. Oh, plays like a bitch is what they said. And then not knowing, like, Paul Millsap is a really, really good NBA player or anything like that. How can you say that the fans who listen to that are informed enough to make this a really great sports town? They're uninformed fans now.
Absolutely. Anybody who listens to Felger and hopes to be informed is not the type of person who will probably ever be informed, no matter what. So I'm going to go the other way on this one. I'm going to say that the crowd is mostly informed, and the crowd who shows up at game three will understand that Millsap is one hell of a player. So
yes, the fans who watch the games are definitely informed. It's the casual fans that will parrot the crap that people like him and Tanguay and others say. I really have a problem with this. Look, I have a definite problem with how they act on the radio, because we're here putting it together ourselves. You're freaking walking back from dinner doing a show. Because for what? We're not getting paid anything for this. We're doing it because we love it. We're doing it because people like to hear it, and we want to put a show out there. We enjoy talking about it. People enjoy listening to it, and it's a passion for us. And to have people who are paid as much as these guys to go out there and say stupid crap like that, that bothers me a lot.
Yeah, no, it's definitely frustrating. And when you see a quote like that, I mean, that is jarring, because Millsap, he might be like top 10, 15 player now. And to call him a stiff is outrageous. With 4 minutes left, he chased down Turner from like 7 or 8 feet and swatted him and started a fast break the other way. He's a great player.
I don't even know how you could watch that game. That game won, and then...
You might be giving him too much credit. Who knows if he did watch
the game. That's where I'm getting at. Like, how after that game, so even if you never watched basketball before and you kind of got a primer, so like you know what basketball is, you've never watched Atlanta before, and you say, okay, here, watch this game. At the end, you'll be like, wow, that guy, that Millsap guy for Atlanta is pretty good, huh? He's pretty good.
Yeah, he does a lot of things out there. And if you watched the last game of the regular season, he had 31, 15, 4 assists. Just 4 blocks and 3 steals or some ridiculous line like that. So we got to stop talking about Felger. We have gone out. I don't want to talk about Felger. I don't want to waste another breath.
Hey, you brought it up, man.
And honestly, like, Felger can be entertaining. My dad listens to Felger every day and really is amused by Felger. And I get why people listen to him. But when you say things like that, it's really bad.
Embarrassing. It's really embarrassing. Bad.
Yeah.
That's something that a normal person would be embarrassed by. He won't be, but a normal person should be embarrassed by something like that. We are not embarrassed because we're bringing you the best goddamn podcast in Celtics Nation. So you listen to us, you'll be plenty informed. And hopefully the next time you listen to us, the Celtics will have at least won one game in this series. I got to tell you, we're not going to be able to do a podcast before game three. Because I have a friend that I'm going to punch in the face because he's getting married this weekend on Friday night.
Wow.
Who schedules a wedding during the NBA playoffs? Bad.
How about this? So my cousin, she planned her wedding, I don't know how many months ago. And then my little brother's high school graduation is the exact same time and day.
Oh, God.
Unreal.
That's poor planning.
Unreal. But nobody should ever schedule a wedding during the NBA playoffs.
No, April wedding? What are you, nuts?
Get it at the end of June, early July, after the playoffs, guys, after the finals. You're out of control. Out of control to do that.
On the plus side, it's in Las Vegas, so I'll be in Las Vegas this weekend. So it's not all bad.
On the plus side, I'll be losing all my money.
So... We better start getting paid on this podcast soon, because I'm going to need to get some flight return fare for my flight home. Anyway, let's hope the Celtics can get their act together. Let's hope that Avery Bradley's injury is not as bad as it seems, and that somehow Kelly Olynyk can play in game two. That'll really, really help. I know people don't want to, you know, admit, some people want to make the jokes, but we could really use Kelly Olynyk. So we'll see how it goes, and we'll try to record a show at some point. Hell, maybe I'll record a show from the airport because I'm inspired by Jay King and his dedication.
That would be a elite playoff podcasting.
Either way, we will see you and talk to you next time on the Rain and Jays podcast.